Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Let's go ahead and get into this. We speak in the atmosphere. We say, let there be light. We will do a meditation at the end. I think the meditation is very important, and I have a couple things I want to share with you about meditation that I haven't, but let's do this first. Our topic for this month is being is everything, creating a new destiny for yourself through self-transformation. And I want to show you this one scripture. This is out of Romans chapter 9. This is verse 20, and I'm out of the New International Version. And this is, it's a part of Paul's letter to Rome, and he's using a metaphor of pottery, the potter and the clay, which is, you see that theme come up several times through the Bible. But here in this context, he's really talking about accepting who God made you to be. And he says, this is the way he says it in the NIV. He says, but who are you, a human being, to talk back to God? Shall what is formed say to the one who formed it, why did you make me like this? King James says, shall the thing formed say to him who made it, why did you make me thus? It's a very interesting concept, especially when you juxtapose it with the idea of self-improvement, of being your best self. And then this seems to imply, you're fine just like you are. This is the way God made you. Don't question it. I want to say something about this, and I think you just indulge me on this, because let me say this. I was watching on Facebook, several people had posted, I guess it's a video of Little Richard, who must be 84 now. You know, the bombalumak, and he's making this big statement that he's no longer gay. That, you know, that God made men to be men and women to be women. And, you know, I'm sorry, Little Richard's gay. I mean, there's no, it wasn't rocket science. First time you saw him, you know, in the 50s with eyeliner on and singing Good Golly Miss Molly, brilliant talent. Kind of was not necessarily the one who invented rock and roll, but definitely one of the founding fathers, but definitely gay. And if you follow his journey throughout his life, he's been in and out of religion, in and out of Christianity, in and out of deliverance. I remember back in the 80s, it was a big deal because he said he was delivered. And I remember that's when I was pretty close to Candy State, and she wanted to have him on her show, but she wasn't sure he was really, you know, like, I followed his journey. And then he went through years of saying, you know, this is who I am, deal with it. And we're like, we kind of already knew, but sure. Kind of like when Liberace died and they said he was gay and he died of AIDS. We're like, what? Liberace was gay? No possible way. That was sarcasm, by the way. And I just couldn't watch the whole thing. I got the gist of it, but I was trying to be compassionate to where he's coming from, because, you know, he was raised in old school religion and has a lot of inner conflict about a reality in his life that I can certainly identify with. And I just didn't spend a lot of time on it, but I was reading a few people's comments, and the general consensus was from a lot of people is he thinks he's about to die, and he wants to make this statement before he dies, just in case God's not cool with who he is. Now, this is interesting, because I got to tell you, when I teach things like this, and when I read after, I mean, there's a lot of these scientists now that really talk a lot about the possibility of changing your DNA. They're learning things about the malleability of the brain that they used to think that you were set like at 5 years old, and now they're finding different ways that people can sort of rethink their the way their brain chemistry works. Even I read this thing, and I don't know enough about it to even explain it to you coherently, but it was a woman who had, she had no peripheral vision. And there was a way that she learned to rethink how her brain saw things, because it's really your, it's mostly your brain that's seeing things more than you actually your eyes. And it was fascinating to read how she learned to, it didn't happen all at once, but little by little, she said one day she got in her car and the steering wheel popped out. And it was like, you know, she could start to see things. So there's this idea that, well, maybe you can go back and change certain things about yourself, which I got to tell you, this week is the 7th anniversary of me coming out. And I got to tell you, if it was possible to change my orientation, I think, baby, too much has happened in the last 7 years. Even if I want to change, it's like you can't come back and go, I was just kidding. You know, y'all still with me? I'm saying this because what I'm talking about this month is about being yourself, but also the possibility of change. I got to tell you, even before I went to this workshop that I mentioned earlier, I really kind of had to read after him because I thought, because he talks a lot about changing DNA and gets good results. People that have genetic diseases that have passed down are, you know, are breaking the cycle, what we used to call breaking the curse, but breaking the cycle of that. And I remember thinking, man, I wonder how far he's going to take this, because there's certain areas of my life I'm fine with how they are. And then I really thought it through, and I thought, well, that's coming from the assumption that if you think something about you is wrong with you. And I don't think something about me is wrong with me. I think that's about 10% of the population. It's, you know, we've talked about this. It's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a thing. I'm saying that to say there are things about you that's just the way you are. Your personality, your reactions to things. So what do we do? Do we just say, this is who I am, everybody in my life, deal with it? Or do we try to improve things? I got to tell you, they were just minor things. They're the kind of things that if I even apologized to the person, they would think it was ridiculous. But just little things during the week that I maybe didn't answer the way that I wanted to or whatever, and then later think, oh, I shouldn't have said it that way or whatever. And you just can't go to everybody, you know, all day long and go, you know, that thing I said, you know, no, not that thing, the other thing I said, I probably shouldn't have said that. And after a while, you just have to say, look, you know, I said it, they probably don't even care, you know. Like yesterday, we spent the day with his boss and his wife, and we had a great time. They took us out on the boat, and it was great. They made lunch for us, and then afterwards we were just sitting around talking, and you know, it's kind of that time in the day when you think, is this time for us to go? Or I don't know. I mean, we've been here for about 5 hours. So I said to his wife, who is a friend of mine, I mean, she's adorable, I said, hey, just let us know, you know, when you want us to go. And she says, well, now would be a good time. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I know that's just the way she is. She's blunt, and they were tired, and, you know, they'd had a couple of margaritas. They probably wanted to lay down. But I couldn't help but think, did I say something? You know, I mean, a couple of times I've asked him, I said, I didn't say something that they didn't like. He's, oh, no, that's just the way she is. It's just, you know, you're expecting somebody to go, no, Lord, y'all spend the night. And she's like, yeah, now be a good time. And she wasn't kidding. I mean, she stood up. She says, do you want something like a Coke for the road? And I'm like, no, we're good. Bye. Thanks. what just happened? But you know, with something that happens later, you think, you go, you know, you're rewinding, like, did I say something that they didn't like, or what was it? And finally, I just say, you know, it was what it was. And I'm sure it's fine. That's just the way she is. And she considers that we're good enough friends that she could say, this has been great. I'm ready to go lay down. I'm like, oh, okay. Maybe that's the better way. Maybe most people go through their life lying to one another. Go, no, y'all stay, when they really don't want them to. I mean, maybe that's what Jesus meant when he said, let your yes be yes and your no be no. It's like, no, I want you to go now. I love you. It's been great. Bye. I'm like, okay then. Well, and I know, you know, Proverbs says, remove thy foot from thy neighbor's house, lest he be weary with thee. So God knows, I don't want to overstay my welcome. It's just, you know, we're relaxing out by the lake, and well, I guess we're done. Okay, then. Bye-bye. So, you know, there's always things that you're thinking, should I have done this differently? Should I have said this differently? And second-guess yourself, and then you just have to go, ugh, whatever. I'm saying all that to say there are some things about the template of who you are. It's like when you see them flip some of these houses, you can really change a house, but there's not much you can do with the footprint of it. You know, however an architect designed that house to be on that plat of land, you can't change that much. You've got to work within that sort of parameter. And that's, we're kind of all that way. There's certain, I don't know, raw materials, I guess, about our personality that we are, and it doesn't need to change. I guess what I'm talking about this month, I know what I'm talking about this month is take those things about yourself that you've made peace with, but then take them next level. I do believe change is possible. I see it in my own life. I see things that, like, this is crazy to me, but, you know, I love vegetables except raw tomatoes. And I mean, I can eat them. I mean, I went through a phase where if somebody put them in the salad, I'm like, it's too hard to pick it out. I'll just eat it. But I just don't, I like it cooked, just not raw. But when I was a kid, I hated beets. I hated them. I don't know what it must be a thing with red food. Now, I love them. I mean, I love them. Nearly to the point, like, if I go to Whole Foods and they've got, there's a way they do these roasted beets with orange and fennel. I nearly salivate when I look at it. And I think, wow, I would have never, ever thought I would like that. So I know there are things about yourself that for years you didn't like and now you do like. I mean, don't they say that like every 7 years there's things about your taste buds that change or whatever? So there are, you know, changes. You're not just set in stone. But here's the better way to say it. It's like there's a balancing act with this part of you that you embrace and you've made peace with, and it's not vulnerable to peer pressure, which is one of the good things about aging. If you do it right in your head, you know you stop being who everybody thinks you should be, and you are who you are, and that's a great thing about aging. But then there's also a part of you that just shouldn't be set in stone. I mean, you should be able to, you know, still be open to change. And what I'm trying to hit at this month is hitting that sweet spot, if you will. Where is that place of knowing what part of me is good and beautiful and I'm happy with it? Even the things about your personality, you know, I've taught on this before, but the very thing about you that can drive people crazy is the thing about you that's actually wonderful. Like in the scriptures, Peter was the first one to say or do something stupid. You know what I mean? He's the one that Jesus called, said, "Get behind me, Satan." And he's the one that in the Garden of Gethsemane, he gets up and cuts the guy's ear off. And he just didn't think. But that worked for him on the day of Pentecost. I mean, that same spontaneity in him was what, it's what made him jump out of the boat and run toward Jesus when he saw him on the beach after the resurrection, or why on the day of Pentecost when everybody else is like, what the heck's going on? He stands up and says, oh, this is that spoken by the prophet Joel. So that thing that was in him that made you want to smack him was also the thing that when it was at the right time, a word fitly spoken, it's like, oh, that was an amazing thing. Like, how, that's brilliant that you connected the dots from the day of Pentecost to Joel's prophecy. So that, I remember I did this teaching years ago. I used to talk about this a lot when I traveled. It was like if you meet somebody that's a pathological liar, they just lie all the time. What if they are really meant to be somebody who can imagine and think outside the box and understand the concept of calling those things which are not as though they are? It's like maybe it's a beautiful quality of theirs that they can see beyond reality. It just needs to be tweaked some. You know, it doesn't need to be destructive. You understand? Or like somebody that's like super whiny and over emotional. What if that's really coming from? They're very compassionate, and they have the heart of an intercessor. Maybe it just needs to be guided some. That what drives you crazy about them is what's really wonderful about them. You know, it's like if you know somebody that's a control freak, they're great to have around because they're the first ones to get up and clean up, wash the dishes. You know, it can drive you crazy, but they're also, you know, when you're wanting to sit around and drink coffee and put your feet up, they're the one cleaning up the kitchen. So, viva la control issues. Like, good, go with God. So I think, first of all, whoever you are, and I want to say to little Richard, we all love you. You're gay. We all knew it. God knew it. God made you just like you are. If you hadn't been gay, you wouldn't have been so flamboyant, and rock and roll wouldn't be so cool. So we're good with it, Richard. Stop. Go to heaven gay. It's fine. God, I promise you, I'll find you there, and we'll sing Good Golly Miss Molly, and we'll have a good time, and Elijah and Moses will be joining in. Bishop, will that? Yes, yes. All that stuff gets resolved in eternity. I promise. It was funny when Hugh Hefner died last week. I was just the wide spectrum of friends that I have on Facebook. I was reading their reactions to his death because I got lots of people. I don't know him personally, but lots of people like, he is burning in hell for all the pornography he brought to the. And then other people like, he's probably having coffee with Jerry Falwell right now, and they're all talking it over. I thought, well, these are some varied perceptions of what you think happens to somebody like. Look, I don't judge people. Jesus said, if you thought about adultery, you've committed it. So I'm like, hey, you know what? I'm staying out of people's sex lives. You know, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. And mind your own business. I don't think God's quite as obsessed with sex as I think a lot of fundamentalist Christians think that he probably is. That may be say more about them and their issues than it says about God. But I digress. Let me show you this quote. I've quoted her several times, but I do like this quote. She says, it's not until you change your identity to match your life blueprint that you will understand why everything in the past never worked. Now, I do believe this. I do think there's something about I know the word purpose gets overused a lot, but there is something about understanding what it is that you're here to do. I think some people overthink it, but just having a general idea to work within your blueprint. There's certain, if I can use the house flipping metaphor once again, if a house is built to be a certain way, there's only so much you can change it. You know what I mean? If it's built to be contemporary, you can't make it traditional without it looking weird. So you kind of have to stay with, this is what the blueprint is. We can modernize it. We can enlarge the place, whatever, but this is what this house is. Like, the furniture in my loft is conducive to living in a city. There's like, it would look stupid to have country furniture, you know, with a big picture window with a city skyline, you know. But now, if I go up to the mountains somewhere in a cabin, I want the furniture to look like we've gone to the mountains. You know what I mean? So there's certain propriety in just everything, whether you call it feng shui or whatever. There's things that you're like, well, this would be the right thing for this thing. I do believe this idea of examining why some things haven't worked. Maybe you're just in the wrong place. I know I've told you this story a bazillion times. Please indulge me. Let me say it one more time. But I remember back when I was in my little phase of hunting, which, I mean, talk about being out of your element. I mean, I did it, but it was always odd for me to do it. And this one time I was hunting with baseball player, and he had flown in a guy who was like a Daniel Boone. This guy, he lived outside. This is the kind of guy that would go out hunting by himself and kill a bear and carry the bear all the way back to civilization. He actually did that. And he was real awkward around me because every time he would swear, he would apologize. And, you know, I could just tell he had a perception of a minister, and he was just really awkward. And that somehow, I don't know where Ryan went, but somehow he and I found ourselves kind of in the woods together talking. And he said, he used a four-letter word, and then he apologized. He said, man, I got to tell you, I'm really nervous being around you. I've never known a preacher before, and you're really freaking me out. I said, why? I haven't said anything. He said, I don't know. It's just the whole God thing. He said, just makes me nervous. And he said, I don't know stuff like you, and I'm not smart like you, and I don't know the Bible like you, whatever. I said, let me explain something to you. I said, in my element, maybe I am that guy, but out here in the woods, I said, of the two of us, you're the PhD. So whatever perceived thing that you're feeling about me, no, if you tell me this is what we need to do, I'm following your orders. And you know what he told me later? And it was one of the best compliments I ever got, you know, from a guy like him. He said, I got to tell you, he said, I didn't want to come out here and hunting with you, but now that I've hunted with you, he said, I would rather go out with you than any of these hotshot guys that are full of testosterone that you can't tell them anything, and they end up shooting somebody or shooting my dog or something. He said, you actually followed orders, and he said, you were a pleasure to hunt with. I said, it's because I understand my limitations. So if you tell me something, I know I'm out of my element, so of course I'm going to follow instructions. I wish everybody understood that. Now, when I'm doing this, like right now, holding this microphone, I'm the most relaxed of my entire week. I could stand up, it would be boring, but I could stand up here and go to sleep in front of you. This is how relaxed. I have never had stage fright. I'm much more comfortable speaking over a microphone than I am one-on-one, because y'all have to shut up and listen to me. I wish that weren't, that's not totally true, but I wish it weren't partly true, because it partly is. But that's part of the equipping that you have to have to be. I was thinking about it this week. How many sermons must I preached in nearly half a century? I mean, it's just a lot. And a bunch of y'all have heard a bunch of them. And I'm always amazed that you come back and listen one more time. I'm always happy that you do. But I don't know why what brought this up? We were talking about this week. I said, you know, people that are public speakers, whatever, you kind of have to be, not egocentric, but you kind of have to be a little bit full of yourself, or otherwise you'd never be able to handle the criticism that you get for just everything, you know, not so much now, but generally. I guess I was reading some minister had said something and people were taking the task for it. And I thought, you'd have to really kind of believe in yourself to even have the audacity to get up and say stuff, especially saying, I think God said this, or this is what I think God is like. I mean, that's kind of over the top to even say that you could speak for God. I've just talked myself out of the ministry. Thank you. I think I just retired. No, but you understand what I'm saying, and it's like that. What's the country star's name? Bocephus. He's the son of. He's Hank Williams. Hank Williams Jr. His famous song was "A Country Boy Can Survive," and there's a truth to that sentiment that, you know, if you're in your element, if you're from the streets, you know how to survive on the streets. There's things that somebody who didn't grow up in that environment wouldn't know. And so there is something about being, like I was thinking about it this week. Ken stayed at his dad's a couple of nights, and I kind of been sedentary all day, and I thought, I need to take a walk. I should have gone and worked out. I need to at least walk. And I'm putting on a backpack and going for a walk like at 9:30 at night. And I thought, if I were to tell my mom I was doing that, which she may be streaming, I know she would say, you should be going out this time of night. But I, that's where I live. That's my neighborhood. That felt totally normal to me. I'm not walking in dangerous areas, but I am walking out at night, and you know, people are asking me for money, whatever. That's my. I'm used to that. That doesn't. I'm not scared in that environment. That's where I live. That's my neighborhood. That's what I know. I am kind of a nocturnal creature. It seemed perfectly normal to me to be setting off on a walk at, you know, nearly 10 o'clock at night. And there is something about seeing someone in their element. So I think if you look at this quote, there's a lot of truth to that. What are the things that haven't worked? Maybe that's just not really what you're supposed to be doing. I mean, I don't think it's rocket science. Like if you say you're called to music ministry, but you can't carry a tune, you're not called to music ministry. If it's unbearable to listen to you, I mean, it's really, it's not that complicated. If if you can sing, you probably ought to sing. If you can't, you probably ought to just enjoy somebody else singing. Right? I know that was always an issue. What little bit I knew about when we used to have, we had basketball, but we had baseball teams at Church of the Now. I knew that was always, every season that would be an issue because people, like everybody wanted to play. And there's a way that a coach coaches, you know, to put you in a position that plays to your strengths. And not everybody likes that because a lot of people think they have strengths in areas that they really don't. All right. I think I've belabored this point enough by the saturated expressions on your face. I think it's time to move. I know you're like, sweet Jesus, he's just on number two. He's probably going to do seven. I just read your mind. Mm-hmm. See, those of you that are laughing big is what you just thought. Number three. Quick before I lose them. This is good. This is a long quote, but it's good. Finding the center of strength within ourselves is, in the long run, the best contribution we can make to our fellow man. I absolutely agree with that. There's no greater thing you can do for the world than to be yourself. Because a lot of the people that are committing crimes, driving people crazy, hurting people, whatever, it's because they're in the wrong life and they don't know it, and they're not comfortable in their own skin, and they're, I'm not justifying bad behavior, but a lot of bad behavior can be traced to somebody searching for authenticity and not feeling good about who they really are. It goes on to say, one person with indigenous inner strength exercises a great calming effect on panic among people around him. This is what our society needs, not new ideas and inventions, important as these are, and not geniuses and supermen, but persons who can be, and that's what I'm talking about this month, persons who have a center of strength within themselves. This seems like a small thing, but this will make my point. Last week, I was doing a meditation. I sat down. I was trying to light a candle. I couldn't get it lit. It wasn't that big a deal, but I just couldn't do it. Rosalind's a teacher. She's, you know, teachers have to be conflict solvers. She very calmly came up, lit the candle, and when everybody laughed, she said, well, he's a lefty. He couldn't do it with his right hand. And I thought, she's clearly called to be a teacher because that's the way a teacher would think. Understand what the student's strengths are, understand what their limitations are, understand what their whatever. I love seeing somebody in their element. She wasn't overstepping my authority or anything. It was just like, that's the teacher in her that says, let me help you because I understand you're left-handed and you're trying to do this with your right hand. And it wouldn't have been the end of the world if I hadn't lit the candle, but I was trying to light the stupid candle. And I love when I see somebody like, oh, you're in your element. Okay, that's good. It's why Paul said some things that I have issues with, and I'll talk to him about it at some point. But when he had this concept of the body of Christ, that's brilliant. When he said, the eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you, because every body part has it. That's brilliant. If everybody just understood that concept, where he said, if the whole thing were an eye, where would be the hearing? That's the problem with society, is people don't know they need other people who have strengths in areas that they don't have. That's why the body all flows together. When you get sick, when one part of the body stops supporting another part. I mean, that's an oversimplified explanation of disease, but that's really what, that's the dis-ease of it. This is an even, no, this is another quote. I can't remember what I put on here now. Very simple statement, but definitely a selah. In order to remember who you are, you have to have known it in the first place. That's pretty deep. That seems simple, but that's profound. It's easy to say, remember who you are, Simba. But if Simba never knew it to begin with, and so that's why if there's a people group who has needs in an area that you can't empathize with, you need to let them have that because you don't know why they need that. It may be something you don't need, but they need it because they haven't had it. So why resent them from having it? One of the funniest things, Bishop Flunder used to talk a lot about her mother, who was like a real higher up in the Church of God in Christ, and apparently was a real character. And she said that her mother got to a place financially where she could afford like a full-length mink coat. So she wanted one. And so Bishop Flunder said to her, she says, you know, Mom, a lot of animal rights activists have a problem with you wearing animal furs. And she said, I'm going to tell you something. I don't need some white person coming up that could afford it all these years. Now they're going to be all politically correct. She said, I wish somebody would come up and tell me I can't wear this. She said, I'm wearing this. I can't repeat everything that she said. It was just really funny because she was saying, that's fine that if in your experience you can already be to that place, but for some of us, we would like to have this now, and we don't need your opinion about it. If you don't like it, go somewhere else. I'm wearing the mink coat. It was funnier when she said it, clearly from your lack of laughter. You were not as amused by the story as I was. I need to go back and look at how she actually said it. But it was just funny. I could just picture her mother, who was clearly a spitfire, saying, I wish somebody would come up and say something to me about this coat. Let me tell you something about when a black woman says, I wish somebody would, that really means you don't want to do that. That's really what that means. I don't want to stereotype a gender or a people group. I'm just saying there's a particular strength when a black woman says, I wish somebody would. That means don't do that. I better get off that one right now. I'm noticing all the black men in here are being very quiet. Like, I don't know anything about that. Mm-hmm. I used this verse of scripture last week, but I want to show it to you out of the concordant literal version. This is transformed by the renewing of your mind. I think it's interesting the way it says it here. It says, and not be configured to this eon. A lot of times in the King James, the word that got translated world is actually the word age or eon. And an eon can be anything from 3 days to a millennium. So when it says, be not conformed to this eon, you know, in the Pentecostal church, we were taught not to be worldly. You don't want to be like the world. But that's not the word that was used in the original language. It was don't be a slave to current trends is what really, he says, don't be conformed to this age. The song that Marshall sang, that was, you know, they recorded that, I think, 1970. And I just finished this week watching the very powerful, very sobering, it's not an easy watch, very well done. It's the Ken Burns Vietnam on PBS, I think it's 6 parts. I don't remember. I watched them all, but it took a while. I had to take a break from it a little bit. But the final installment is actually very life-affirming. There's a lot more going on in Vietnam now in reconciliation than I even knew about. And the final thing is that is their role in the credits is Let It Be. They're playing that, and it really kind of makes you hear the lyrics sort of for the first time. And I have a playlist of songs that are songs about a better world. You know, like back in the 60s, there's a new world coming, and it's just around the bend. There's a new world coming. This one's coming to an end. And I have a lot of songs like that. All the rock groups had, Three Dog Night had Shambhala. There's always some song about looking for the better world. And then or like Ray Stevens singing Everything is Beautiful. I mean, a lot of them are from the 60s and 70s. And you look at that and you think, wow, this was written like half a century ago. And in some ways, you think, man, this song seems more needful now than it did in the 60s. It's a reminder, do not be conformed to this current age. You have to stay transcendent. Like these ideas of everything from Dr. King talking about the beloved community to whatever, you have to stay up here to say, all right, I see all this happening in the world around me, but I'm still going to hold to this ideal that people will play to their better angels. If I can refer to his song one more time, I thought it was interesting. He didn't say there is still a chance that they may see. He said there is still a chance that we may see. He sang it like a prayer. Well, like, God help us all to see beyond. I mean, you know, I don't want to bring the room down, but this, I mean, every shooting is horrible, but this one in Las Vegas, I mean, bear with me here for a minute. If you hear somebody, which I would like to say, since I am a white American male, pretty much all the mass shooters are white American men. I just want to say, has nothing to do with immigration at all. But even the people who have been Muslim terrorists, I'm not defending them, but at least you could get inside their head and say, well, in his warped idea of righteousness, he thinks he's doing the right thing. Or even if a postal, not defending it, but if a postal worker goes nuts and comes in and shoots everybody at the post office, you could at least say, oh, he snapped one day. With this guy, it brings up this whole other confusing, I mean, he made $5 million last year, a retired white man in his 60s, and like, he doesn't even fit the profile of what you think would be dangerous. So it's just, I feel it just driving around, like everybody feels the heaviness of, God almighty, what is happening to the world? I was watching a news thing back in the 30s, when there was the St. Valentine's Day massacre, 7 men were killed at once, and there was a newspaper article that people were so shocked that 7 people could be shot at once. And the article was about, what has this world come to that 7 people could be killed in cold blood? And the news person said, now 7 people being shot doesn't even make the news. Like if it's not 30, 40, 50 plus, and each one that happens, like, well, this is the biggest one in history. And several times this week, I just had to go back and listen to some of those songs and say, I'm not going to give in to despair about what I think is happening to the world and our culture. I mean, you know, that's why a song like that is real important right now. I mean, I know it sounds real hippie 60s idealistic, but there's some things about those ideas. Imagine, you may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I mean, my God, people, somebody needs to hold on to those ideas and not just give in to, you know, despair. Be not configured to this eon, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. We end today with meditation. I want to say a little something about it. But it's interesting that the word is actually called transcendental meditation, and it means to transcend what you see as is the natural world. People, that's what we've been saying in faith for years, calling those things which are not as though they are. The seen things are temporal, the unseen things are eternal. That's transcendence. Transcendence isn't some weird witchcraft word. It's a beautiful word. If you don't, let me tell you something. If you don't maintain some transcendence, you'll get sucked into the depression of this world, and it just makes it impossible to live. You've got to not be out of touch with reality, but you got to keep it up here somewhere. I know for me, because I have a tendency to be a news junkie, I have to make myself turn off. You've watched this same story five times. Don't watch it again. You know what's going on in the world. You've got to have some time of transcendence. I've got to, you know, I think that's one of that Sam Smith song hit me so strong. Because he says, I'm not a really religious person, but I look and I think I need to pray. And I'm like, amen to that. Beautiful song. All right. Now here's the, this is the quote that was so long. I'm like, oh good, we're just down to the long quote. Hang on with me, we're in the home stretch. Come on, we've gone this far, you can go the distance. It is a law, not of man's or of woman's, but of life. Before you can have a different life, before you can be happier, wiser, more at peace, and in quiet command of yourself, I like that phrase, you must first be different. Being is everything. And before you can learn how to be different and change your destiny, you first must realize that secret place within yourself where your own future is created. What? Can I get a what up in here? That's beautiful. You must consciously enter that place of power where all of your life choices are made for you. It's called the present moment, the now. Ever heard of it? And this now is the seed of all that comes later. You know, we could probably all be well served just to put a little loop recording of stay in the now, stay in the now, stay in the now. I don't think you can hear it. I can't. I built a whole mega ministry on that concept, and I still need to hear it every day. Stay in the now, stay in the now, stay in the now. Stay in the now, get in the now. Forget those things which are behind. Stay in the now. Take no thought for tomorrow. Sufficient are the days of the evil thereof. Stay in the now. God is the I am. This is now. Now faith is. Stay in the now. Because everything about the way your body functions, everything, it's always wanting to move you to the past or project you in the future. You got to, I mean, it's like you have to hold on to the now. It's like getting on a float out in the ocean. You know what I mean? It's like you have to really hang on to it. Because every wave of the past comes and wants to knock you off. And you have to say, no, I'm going to stay afloat in the now. There's no point in having that same stupid thought again that I've had 10 million times. It's not going to make anything better. Stay in the now. It's only what you do right now that's the seed of personal change. And in the endless beauty and mystery of the present moment, this same seed of change is also the seed of your new and higher nature. That pretty much encapsulates what I'm trying to talk about this month. That's basically it. Let me go and wrap this up. I love Emerson quotes. And this one is probably my favorite of his, is to be yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make you something else is the greatest accomplishment. The reason I have wanted to maintain meditation this month, especially in talking about this, is I think there is something about meditation that helps you get in touch with who you really are. We're going to meditate. If you're welcome to stay. If you're uncomfortable with this, you can excuse yourself and we won't be offended. But I do want to explain something to you. I don't think any of you have this question, but I want to alleviate any question you have about this. If you noticed, we don't sit on the floor here for obvious reasons, but you know, most people when they meditate, they probably do sit on the floor and they sit in the lotus position. And if you'll notice, they do this thing with their fingers. I was reading about this. It's a word out of both Hinduism and Buddhism. It's called a mudra. And what's interesting about it, the things I was studying last night, there's a whole... It's kind of, if any of you have ever gone for reflexology, you know, the idea that there's points on your on the sole of your foot that are connected to different parts of your body. There's a whole thing to it. I don't know enough about it to explain it to you, but that like when you touch a finger a certain way, it's chakras, pressure points that release breath. But what's interesting is I was reading articles that were going back showing Christian iconography. If you look at some of the pictures of Jesus, he's nearly always, he's like this or he's like this. There's one of them where you touch the ring finger. You go back and look at some of the early church fathers, nearly every one of those, you know, they have a little halo around them and they make this gesture. Even, and this is bizarre to me that people read this into it, but I have read some of the evangelicals' support of Donald Trump, and they've even said that when he talks, they know he's put there by God because he does that, and it's a Christian thing. And I thought, well, that's a bit of a stretch, but but the point is, there is something to. It's not just silliness. There's something about the way you're touched. It's kind of a different thing, but like when I go to Dr. Sheila for chiropractic, she's not the kind of chiropractor that cracks your neck and stuff. She has the, I don't know, what do you call that?
Actuator.
What do you call it? Actuator. It's like it goes click, and you, like the first couple times she did, I thought, Dr. Sheila, you're a nice person, but this isn't going to, how is this going to help me? I mean, I need to hear something crack. You know what I mean? But then I noticed, I didn't feel it immediately, but like within the next few hours, like, oh, that really did, that worked. So I asked her one day, I said, if we're that susceptible to just something that simple, then how are we not just knocking ourselves, like if you're bumping into things all the time, how are you not just knocking yourself out of whack? She said, it's the way it's aimed. I thought, well, that's really interesting. It's not like, you know, it's not like that. It may be, you know what I mean? It's your body is complex and whatever. I'm saying all that to say, I'm not requiring you to do this. But I have noticed a couple of people in meditation would do like that. And I want you to know Christians can do that. It's okay. It's not occultic. It's not witchcraft. It's not, you know, is he trying to make us Buddhist? Hey, there's some things you could learn from Buddhism that could probably serve you really well. And I promise you, Jesus would be fine with it. Jesus would be like, look, I've told you everything I know. You know, if you can pick up something from there, you know, because, come on. Y'all with me on that? So I just think it's interesting. It's spelled M-U-D-R-A-S, mudras. And just Google it and read about it. It's very interesting how, and particularly in meditation, when people make this gesture, it reminds me... You'd have to understand Pentecostalism to get the nuanced part of this. But I remember asking a professor of mine one time, I said, what's your definition of the difference between Pentecostals and Charismatics? You know what he said? He said, Pentecostals are this, Charismatics are this. And I knew what he meant. It was what he was saying is there's a different psychology of the Holy Spirit to people who haven't come through the legalism of classical Pentecostalism. If you weren't raised in it, that's probably lost on you, but I knew exactly what he meant. And even when I took homiletics, which is the art of preaching, I never really practiced this, but if you're really going to be a true pulpitarian, there were certain hand gestures you were supposed to make. Like if you use the word supplication, you did, like there was a whole art to it. And when you look at some of these guys that are real like preacher types, if you'll notice, they do it. Like they've learned to do those things. I never really aspired to be a preacher, so I just opted out of that. I still haven't figured out a word for what it is that I do. Any of y'all know? I don't know. Is that why y'all keep coming year after year? We don't know what it is. We keep trying to figure it out. Manna. It's manna. What is it? I don't know. What the heck is it? But there is something about I was reading about the sitting up straight, putting both feet on the floor, all those things. It's about lining not just your physicality up, but your you know, your spirit is very connected to your physical body. And when people make that gesture, it's about aligning electropaths and neuropaths, and it's about breath, it's about breathing or whatever. Again, I don't make any of this mandatory. I'm just trying to explain to you why some people do certain things. Y'all with me? So if we can bring the lights down, if this is something you don't want to do, you don't have to. But I tell you what I really like. There is something about when we do it together. It's very powerful. Charles, whatever, give me something that's about, how many minutes you got?
About 9.
Let's do about a 9-minute one. That's good. Y'all are so good at this, you get right into it. So if you can put both feet flat on the floor, sit up as straight as you can, empty your lap if you can, because it's the idea of flow. I don't want any obstructions, no photography during this. We're just going to, you don't have to close your eyes. It's probably going to be better for you if you do. And you don't have to do your hands any particular way, but I would say whatever is comfortable for you that is conducive to flow, do that and stay consistent. There's something about the consistency of breathing that's really important. Go ahead and start that, Charles. Something about the consistency of breath that's very important in meditation. So, you're sitting up straight, your spinal column is as straight as you can be. What I do for posture is I try to imagine touching the ceiling with the top of my head, so it kind of makes everything come into line. And we're going to breathe. It's all about the breath. You're going to inhale. Best way for me is to inhale through the nose, exhale through the mouth. Inhale, hold it for a couple of seconds. You exhale. You're going to get aligned. You don't have to think about anything. If your thoughts wander, just gently bring them back. You're in control. But find a way to breathe and breathe consistently. Inhale, hold it. Exhale. Inhale, hold it, exhale. Inhale, hold it, exhale. The words spirit and breath are always used interchangeably in the scripture. Inhale, exhale. Stay consistent with your breathing. And if you get to the place that you're not thinking anything, that's optimum. That's where you want to be. This isn't about the distraction of prayer. You're not making a petition. This is meditation. It's breath. Inhale. Stress. exhale, strife. Exhale any negative residue from words that were spoken to you or even by you. Just cleanse yourself out. Cleanse yourself of all the negative words spoken to you or by you. Consistent with your breath. You're doing great. Just be aware of your breathing. Thank you. gradually come out of it when you're ready. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. This is a secret place that you have. It's beautiful. Oh, man, I never realized how much stress I'm holding till we do that. And I feel it kind of melt out of me. I'm like, wow. Whew, good stuff. Something about these first few seconds when you come out of it, I don't want to use the word make a wish, but make an intention, because there's, when the atmosphere is cleared, there's, I don't know, that signal's really strong. Just put it out there, what you want. It's very powerful. Good. Good, good, good. Y'all can feel it back there? let's all stay. Oh, that was good. I could do another one. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I can't tell you in honesty that I do this every day by myself. I'm not there yet. But it's very special to me personally to experience this with you guys. It's like there's something about us all doing it together. It feels exponentially, it's just good. You're just going to have a very peaceful day now. How could 9 minutes, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. I can't understand how it makes my back stop hurting, but it does. So don't knock it. Go ahead and hit this. We'll do this for the YouTube people.
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy.
Easy peasy.
Simply text the amount you would like to give to 404-620-5044. And now you can give anytime by texting this number. You will then receive a one-time registration form that links your phone number and opens your account at SimpleGive. Complete the form and you will then receive a successful registration and donation page. For additional information on your account, visit visionthenow.com and click the support tab, then my online donation. When you contribute to Metron, you're also supporting the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment in Metron.
If you have a check, just make it JESM and somebody will be back there. Danny's not here today, so there'll be a place for it. And if you have cash, just pay it forward. Go bless somebody. Did you get anything out of this today? Yes. Be yourself, but be the best you can be, all right? I don't know if it stopped raining yet or not, but I speak protection over you and angels and good stuff happens. You're safe in your car. You're safe in your home. No plague comes anywhere near your dwelling. Your body is well. Good things are coming to you this week. You're going to have a very productive week. And you deserve it because you're beautiful and you're wonderful, fearfully and wonderfully made. You wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Go in peace. I'll see you next week. Love you.